Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about how limitations in the thinking of people, limitations intellectually, perhaps even spiritually, karmically, prevent people from seeing the non-human, extraterrestrial, hyperdimensional, subterrestrial dimension. People that are wedded to the belief that only humans can possibly be responsible for all the evil we see in the world, the depopulation agenda, the GMO attacks, the bioengineering attacks, and all the rest of it. I'm going to talk about how the proof of alien, not just visitation, but alien control is all around us and has been around us from the start. It's just been suppressed, and people in the alternative research field are cherry pickers as much as the intelligence community is, only picking and choosing and discarding at will what suits their own agenda or their own preconceived biases. And I really shouldn't even have to be talking about this stuff. It should be a no-brainer at this point, but it's gotten to the point now where these people are just starting to become a nuisance, if you ask me. They're starting to be a hindrance to the spiritual intellectual development of the human race. So I'm going to talk about this in the first segment because it segues into the members section. And I'm going to talk about extraterrestrial visitation in a mega sense. I'm going to talk about the second sun. It's back. Not that it ever went anywhere, but now the powers that be are having a more difficult time concealing it. For those with the eyes to see, for those who know what they're looking at, I mean, it's as plain as a nose in your face. The second sun and other astronomical bodies attached to it. So first I'm going to talk about how there's all these people through preconceived biases, limitations intellectually, limitations spiritually, whatever the case may be, they just cannot see beyond the programmed illusion that only humans are responsible for this. I'm going to point out the absurdity of all this because it needs to be talked about once and for all in a lucid, comprehensive fashion so we can turn the page and move on to more important things, like figuring how to break out of this matrix prison recycling sewage system, right? Because if we continue to be wedded to the notion that only humans are responsible for all this, then we will not see, at least most people won't see, the hyperdimensional extraterrestrial nature of this trap, of this control matrix system. I think that, and I'll get more into this in this talk, but I think it's comforting for some of these people. They hang on to this notion that, oh, well, if it's only humans, then it'll be easier to defeat them, which is a silly, absurd notion. Okay, where do we start? Hybridization. Oh, that's kind of a weird place to start, Bartley. Not really. There's a very good article in the New Dawn magazine, which I'll be quoting from when it comes to DARPA here in a little bit. But there's a good article in it about the Denisovans, which was an entirely distinct branch of humanoids, and they tended to be larger, more robust, very artistically gifted. They seemed to be able to think in cosmic terms, and some of their craftsmanship, some of their artwork, some of their jewelry suggests an understanding of celestial dynamics, and also they were very musically inclined, right? Now, the Denisovans, it is agreed upon by many people, many archaeologists, many anthropologists, that they had interbred with humans, okay? Now, how do they interbreed with them? Well, that's open to question. It's possible the less spiritually evolved Denisovans, perhaps animated by this Wetiko spirit, which I'd spoken about in the Cannibal Army commentary, you know, a few weeks back. Maybe they just took by force, you know, beholding the the daughters of humanity, of mankind, being fair and vulnerable, they raped and took it upon themselves to make mates of human females they encountered. Okay? That is not beyond the realm of possibility. Just as likely that they interbred with human females on a more consensual basis, on a basis of trust, of compassion, empathy, and understanding. That's also quite possible. I think it's possible that it's kind of somewhere in between, that some of the less spiritually developed Denisovans, if you want to, term it in such a way, took human women by force, just as has been the case that cases have been reported in the Solomon Islands, where some of the hairy giants there raped human women and then thus begat these hybrid bloodlines. And we know that in Russia, the inverse of that happened, where the smaller version of the Sasquatch, the Almas, at least one female Alma was captured, held in bondage, literally chained and enslaved, and used as a sex slave by these sewer scum hybridized males in the local villages. And out of that, there were children and descendants and future generations of people who descended from this female captured Alma. So these things do happen. And the DNA signature of Denisovans can be found in many humans all over the world. And the Denisovans generally describe this taller, robust, almost verging on giants in some cases. They were very tall people, at least. And there's at least two distinct groups of Denisovans. And they each went their own way and they each interbred with humans. So the point of relevance is this. If these Denisovans interbred with humans, then our distant past, not really distant past in geological time, but oh, let's say 40, 50, 60,000 years ago, plus maybe even more recent than that, giants, what we would term giants, and regular sized humans coexisted. And that was the gist of this article, that maybe in back in those days, it was kind of a Lord of the Rings type world, a Narnia type world where giants, very small people, and I'm throwing that in, and normal sized humans, they all coexisted, okay, and interbred. So if archaeologists and anthropologists and biologists can agree that yes, there's significant amount of Denisovan DNA scattered throughout the human population all over the world. Okay, folks, that's hybridization, right? And there's no telling what kind of latent DNA qualities are still extant within the DNA profiles of many people around the world. If this latent DNA from the Denisovans may one day like activate or something and they become more musically inclined, more spiritual, more artistic. Who knows, right? We know that DNA can kind of enfold and unfold itself and manifest abilities, energetic abilities as well. So that's an example of hybridization. Now, we've talked many times on this show and on other podcasts, people have talked about. David Icke has talked about the hybridization of the reptilians, okay? How they have interbred with, forced interbreeding with humans and created this hybridized ruling elite priesthood, mostly harsh patriarchy, also females in their ranks that are 100% on board with their agenda, that are complete whack jobs. They don't have one iota of true divine feminine energy or mentality. They're completely devoid of compassion and empathy. Whack jobs, like I said. Okay, that's the other extreme of the hybridization we're talking about. Okay, so right off the bat, if you're just talking about hybridization and genetics, this whole notion that only humans can possibly be involved. in all of this goes right out the window. Because, as I said at the outset, Denisovans interbred with humans, well, one way or the other, and spread their DNA throughout a significant chunk of the surface human population. And what we know about the reptilian hybridization, the gray hybridization, the mantis hybridization, the hybridization programs of other ETs and other extraterrestrial races, and subterranean races in all likelihood. That's going on as well. And stories about this is embedded in the lore of peoples on the surface going back countless millennia. Okay? Because I'm going to go point by point how these people who assume that only humans can be involved in this global tyranny, how they systematically ignore so many data points. They are not real researchers, these people. They just blow a lot of smoke. They're impassioned. They speak as if they're talking down from a scientific pedestal when many of their concepts of science are bogus anyway. In effect, they are useful idiots and gatekeepers, and they don't even know it. I mentioned that the lore of the surface people going back countless millennia is filled with accounts of what we would regard as non-human intelligences, extraterrestrials, giants, tiny dwarf-like people, subterranean civilizations. It goes on and on and on. So that's routinely dismissed out of hand, not even taken into consideration by these only humans who are doing this. And so right off the bat, you have this problem of cherry picking, just omitting and leaving out details. And they're probably not even aware these details exist, many of these people, because, like I said, they're not real researchers. They don't know that these things have been told about for a long time. Likewise, they dismiss out of hand the notion of Greek mythology, Norse mythology, the wars of gods and men, etc., etc. When again, that was part and parcel of the lore of surface people for countless millennia. The Native Americans throughout America talk about wars with giants, battling giants. It was a us versus them war of extermination. Some of these giants, well, you can't call them cannibals because they weren't eating themselves so much as they were picking on eating the smaller humans. And it was a fight for survival. It's like you either defeat these giants or you wind up on their dinner plate. There wasn't, much of a choice, and chances are many regular-sized human tribes, I mean, it's regular size insofar as height were concerned, is concerned, were exterminated, wound up in the bellies of giants. And many of the Native American tribes saw this happen to other tribes, said, "Nope, ain't gonna happen to us." Right? And the lore, their cosmologies, their stories, they're filled with such details. And then you look at the fact that the Smithsonian, lamestream science, etc., etc., has systematically covered up the accounts of giant skeletons found. I've had Jim Vieira on the show before. You look at the work of Cremo and Richard Thompson in their book Forbidden Archaeology. Just numerous accounts of not only showing the antiquity of humans, regular-sized humans, going back, millions and millions, hundreds of millions of years, human-like beings on the surface, and their remains and their tools, etc., are being found at strata that goes back hundreds of millions of years. But also the fact that so many bones of skeletons have been found, skeletons of giants, what we would term giants, and everything is relative. In the overall scheme of things, I don't think a humanoid being that's 15 feet high, it may be a giant to us, but in the overall scheme of things, no. There were beings that roamed the surface of the earth that were much taller, much taller than 15 feet high, right? All of that systematically ignored. And that DNA, at some level, would have been passed down. And I pointed that out earlier. So that is systematically ignored. Then you look at the fact that the scientific community, the deep black weapons research aspect of the science field, the engineering field, exemplified by pre-World War II and World War II organizations like the Office of Scientific Research and Development, out of which grew S1, the Manhattan Project, the Manhattan Engineering District was the proper name for it. The extreme secrecy, compartmentalization, weapons development programs. Also, MIT was involved in radar, the weaponization of frequencies, etc., right? Many of those key players, both in the military and in the science and engineering fields, were known to be deeply involved in the research of UFOs and also the study of actual alien artifacts, alien hardware, recovered alien technology. You've heard me talk in the past about Project Twinkle, the problem that the security services had in America were these big green fireballs, and one of my good friends saw one of these big green fireballs fly silently at high speed right over Naval Air Station North Island, my old stomping grounds. He was out by the pier smoking a cigarette, out by the water, and right overhead comes this huge green fireball early in the morning, no sound, disappears out over the ocean. And this buddy of mine ran one of the largest FA-18 and E-2 Charlie airborne warning control avionics depots in all of America, right? He was responsible for the avionics of FA-18s and the E-2C Hawkeyes, I think they're called. They're the Navy's version of the AWACS. Okay, he's not a whack job, right? So when he's saying that he's smoking a cigarette early in the morning and sees a big green fireball, huge fireball, fly right over him without a sound, at high speed, breaking the sound barrier, should have created a sonic boom, but didn't, okay? Well, those green fireballs, or something like it, were being seen with alarming regularity over Atomic Energy Commission plants, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where they developed a lot of the uranium-235 in World War II, as well as some of the plutonium-239. Over Hanford, where a lot of the plutonium-239 was developed. Over Los Alamos, over Sandia, etc., etc. These green fireballs were seen flying over, sometimes at high altitude, at very great speed, over some of these Atomic Energy Commission sites, to the point where security officials were saying, these must be sensing operations. These must be probes of some kind. Let's figure out what they are. Are they of Russian, Soviet origin, rather? Or are they something else? Are they extraterrestrial? Someone is monitoring and flying over and making a point of flying over our atomic energy sites where we're developing the fissionable material for the nuclear and later the thermonuclear bombs, right? So they convened a top secret meeting in 1948, Project Twinkle, and they had a meeting, I think it was in a large auditorium in Los Alamos. Present were not only members of Naval Intelligence, Army Intelligence, Air Force Intelligence, and the FBI, but members of the scientific community, including Edward Teller and Luis Alvarez. Who was Luis Alvarez? He was working at MIT, Dr. Luis Alvarez, on radar. And then he was plucked out of that job and put into the Manhattan Project. He was in one of the observer planes running the test equipment, flying big loops around the city of Hiroshima prior to and during and after Hiroshima was destroyed by Little Boy, the uranium-235 device. He was in the plane monitoring all the testing equipment, not on the plane that dropped the bomb, but one of the planes that were assigned to carry the instrumentation to record all the data from the blast, okay? So we're not talking about some kind of lightweight here. And memory serves, he was also, yes, he was part of Project Alberta, obviously, which was the operation on Tinian Island to assemble these nuclear weapons and get them ready for deployment. So he took part in the raid, although from an observer standpoint. So he was at the auditorium in 1948 when a top secret meeting was convened to discuss these green fireballs. And the US government actually commissioned Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, a world expert, world renowned expert in meteorology and meteors. And he came to the conclusion that no, these are not meteors or meteorites, whatever they are. And remember, the people that were making these sightings of the green fireballs were security personnel, were pilots, were scientists, were engineers in and around these Atomic Energy Commission plants. They weren't garden variety, new age, la-di-da, whack jobs. These were people that had high security clearances involved in security, engineering. And they were the ones reporting these green fireballs to the point where they had to convene this meeting. Remember, I told you, my friend who ran one of the largest avionics departments, NAIDEP, Naval Aviation Depot, in all of the United States, he saw one of these green fireballs fly right over his head, very large, high speed, headed straight out into the ocean. Okay, so we're talking about people that have a high degree of credibility in their fields reporting these. And these green fireball reports go back at least as far as 1948. Now, one of the things you hear today is these same people who say that it's only humans involved. They say DARPA this, DARPA that, DARPA, DARPA, DARPA. When they don't even know the origins of DARPA, and I've talked about this, but it bears repeating. The earliest incarnation of DARPA was a joint Army Navy Research and Development Board. And one of its earliest directors was Dr. Carl Compton, the brother of Dr. Arthur Compton, who had won a Nobel Prize for his research into cosmic rays. Well, his brother, Dr. Carl Compton, ran the Joint Army Navy Research and Development Board, to which a number of prominent scientists and engineers were attached, including Dr. John von Neumann. Now, we know this because when Dr. Robert Sarbacher wrote that classic letter to researcher William Steinman, Steinman was pointedly asking Dr. Richard Sarbacher, at the time the dean of the Institute of Technology. And before that, in the 1950s, he was an unpaid consultant in the Pentagon, high-level security access. He had his own private missile development company. And in his role as unpaid consultant for the Pentagon, he had access to files about recovered alien technology, recovered crashed retrieval alien technology, alien bodies, etc., etc. He was the one that briefed Dr. William Smith, the head scientist in the Canadian Department of Transportation. Dr. Wilbert Smith ran his own UFO program in Canada called Project Second Story. And he told Dr. Wilbert Smith that the subject of UFOs at that time, 1950, was the most highly classified in the US, rating 2 points higher even than the hydrogen bomb. And he later, in his letter to William Steinman, specifically mentioned Dr. John von Neumann and Dr. Vannevar Bush, who founded the Office of Scientific Research and Development, out of which the Manhattan Project and other weapons development projects came. And he also went on to mention people like Dr. Wernher von Braun and Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer, Julius Robert Oppenheimer. Again, these are not lightweights. And the source was Dr. Robert Sarbacher, an impeccable source. At the time, the dean for the Washington Institute of Technology. I think I called it another name earlier, the Washington Institute of Technology. Now, these people who say it's only humans this, only humans that, they're not aware of this. And even if you showed it to them, their built-in limitations, their built-in preconceived biases, and these people are maladaptive. I mean, they're maladaptive to the max, to use an old 70s term, where they just cannot wrap their mind around information that conflicts with their preconceived biases. And the point of relevance is, after a number of name changes, the Joint Army-Navy Research and Development Board, which was known to employ scientists who were known to be deeply involved in the analysis of recovered alien technology and alien bodies, after a number of name changes, the Joint Army Research and Development Board became Advanced Projects Research Agency, or ARPA, and then later they added a D to that, Defense Advanced Projects Research Agency, DARPA, which people know of today. So the very agency that they're citing as being responsible for all this man-made stuff, in its earliest incarnation, was involved, known to be involved in alien technology. And what's interesting, in some of those so-called majestic documents, some of these documents were released from insiders in the intelligence community. Others were pried out of the government, the U.S. government, through the Freedom of Information Act. But a lot of them were provided by people on the inside. And I believe that many of these are legitimate, the ones that I have read. In one of those documents, referring to, dealt directly these documents with Roswell, the crash field, the recovery of the alien craft, the alien bodies. And the document stated that analysis of the alien bodies, and I'm paraphrasing here, may provide the basis for a unique bioweapons warfare program. Okay? In other words, the study of these alien bodies, their DNA, their body chemistry, etc., may form the basis for a biowarfare weapons capability. Now, I'm going to read you something from the latest New Dawn magazine, which I highly recommend. I like a lot of the articles that come out of this magazine. They're from Victoria, Australia, New Dawn. In fact, I wrote an article for them once about reptilians. It's a November-December 2018 issue. But before I do, I remind the listeners of the chapters in William Bramley's classic book, Gods of Eden, where he talked about how medieval chroniclers describe these mysterious craft flying around, spraying the atmosphere and the sky, and suddenly everybody fell sick, or a lot of people fell sick. And also, in other places, prior to the outbreak of what we would call the bubonic plague, Black Death, etc., mysterious humanoids, what we would call mysterious humanoids in some kind of tight-fitting outfits, tight-fitting suits, like what we would like in the modern-day skin diver frogmen suits, with what we would perceive to be tanks strapped onto their backs, were spraying some kind of aerosol or some kind of gaseous mixture, some kind of gaseous substance into the wheat fields and crop fields in ancient Europe, where subsequently people came down with the Black Death, the Black Plague. And Bramley talks about this, okay? How at the time people were noticing these things. And then they made a connection between the outbreaks of the plague afterwards and the mysterious appearance of these craft flying through the air and spraying the whole place. I mean, now we take for granted a lot of this chem spraying. But, you know, that wasn't the norm back then. And also these mysterious people in the fields of crops spraying, right, with these tank-looking things in their backs. Okay, keep that point in mind. Okay, I'm going to read an interesting article in the New Dawn magazine now. Okay, this is on page 6 of the New Dawn magazine, November-December 2018 issue. World Watch. Scientists accuse DARPA of genetically modifying insects for bioweapon to spread agricultural viruses. In a scathing report, researchers with the Science Policy Forum have accused the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, of creating a technology ostensibly used to genetically modify crops with insects, but that could be converted into a dangerous and illegal bioweapon, you think? The current program is being funded by the Pentagon's darling research arm, DARPA, who last year was found to be spending millions on, quote, I don't know why I'm laughing, genetic extinction technology, unquote, that could wipe out entire species. DARPA's new project, dubbed, quote, Insect Allies, unquote, involves releasing fleets of genetically modified insects onto crops which would infect plants with a special virus that would genetically modify the plant on location. Okay, let's stop right there for a second. First of all, the notion of using large quantities of insects to do bio warfare is not even new. Unit 741, whose commander, the General Ishii, if memory serves, was brought to the U.S. He should have been hung as a war criminal, but instead he was brought to American war colleges to give lectures on the efficacy of germ warfare. His unit, 741, had released a bunch of fleas, millions of fleas, that had been dosed with bubonic plague and released them in Harbin, China, and other places, right? So this whole concept of using bugs as a bio-warfare vector or agent is not even new. And chances are, Unit 741 was not even the first to do that. Secondly, look at what they're trying to do. They're trying to use insects to, quote, infect plants, unquote, with a special virus that would genetically modify the plant on location. In other words, they're going to turn loose these genetically modified insects that are harboring or carrying a specifically bioengineered virus that when they land and pollinate or whatever these plants, they change the genetic nature, the genetic structure of the plants. That's some wicked alien stuff right there. I mean, that's not even human. That's not even the work of a human consciousness of in the human mind. If you go back into, you know, the history of the human race, and even today, there's a lot of cultures and traditions that still exist today that are very much living in a state of harmony with the ecology, with the planet. The notion of doing things with insects so they can change, substantially change genetic structure of plants, it was just, would be so far over the top, so insane, that no normal human being would conceive of such a thing. That's the point I'm making, that all this stuff is inhuman by its very nature. And DARPA, having been involved with alien technology since at least the late 1940s, at least. And remember, I talked about how the powers that be were already discussing using alien DNA, alien bodies, the study of which would result in a new form of bio-warfare, a new form of germ warfare. And I have my lab friends of mine, one of whom who's since passed away under mysterious circumstances, who was being used as a lab rat by the military and by the ETs, as far as testing all kinds of different, in some cases, possibly, and I'm delving into the realm of speculation here, but the person who told me this spent 10 years in cancer research and was a professional dermatologist. She had the background critically analyze what was being done to her. She thought that the aliens and the military were using her as a guinea pig. They were using alien viruses and alien germs and alien bacteria on her to see how her body would react, right? Okay, back to the article. The lead author of the new Science Policy Forum report, Richard Guy Reeves from the Department of Evolutionary Genetics at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Biology, says the Insect Allies program is a disturbing example of dual-use research in which DARPA, in addition to helping out farmers, is also working on a potential weapon. The report was published in Science on October 5, and it is nothing short of chilling. According to researchers, DARPA, quote, aims to disperse infectious genetically modified viruses that have been engineered to edit crop chromosomes directly in fields, unquote. The technology at the heart of this research could herald an entirely new way of genetically modifying crops. Instead of having to wait for a plant to pass its newly acquired traits onto the next generation, genetic changes would be imposed upon living organisms, a process known as horizontal genetic alteration. Hence the technology's name, Horizontal Environmental Genetic Alteration Agents, or HEGAs. The viruses will be delivered using genetically modified insects as a means of overcoming the previous limitations to delivering HIGAs. According to the report, quote, the regulatory, biological, economic, and societal implications of dispersing such horizontal environmental genetic alteration agents, HIGAs, into ecosystems are profound. Further, this program stipulates that the means of delivery of these viral HIGAs into the environment should be insect-based dispersion, unquote. So they're tampering with the insects, they're modifying their genetics to enable them to be vectors or carriers. Think of each little insect as like a dive bomber or like a insect, modified insect version of a B-52, you know, Stratofortress. And they just go all over the place. And they think they can. Anyone who thinks that can be controlled is nuts. And the way they factor in all this stuff, they absolutely are aware that the insects will just go and do what they want after a while. They operate under a hive consciousness, collective mind, and if they decide to, you know, go from plants to other things other than plants, well, you know, they may just decide to all do that all at once and start stinging and landing on people and biting people, infecting them, and who knows. And the fact that they use the term horizontal, it almost seems to me as if just by describing it as a horizontal means of transmission of these viruses, these DNA altering viruses in plants, that they intend the technology to jump from one species to another. So it may be intended all along that these insects will not only quote-unquote pollinate or genetically alter plants, they'll move on to genetically alter something else as well. And it doesn't specify what kinds of insects either. They could be doing this to parasites like ticks and fleas and lice, right? I mean, they've already done that with ticks. I think of Plum Island, where they created, what was that disease that's plagued so many people? Lyme's disease, where on Plum Island, off the east coast of the U.S., these biogeneticists, whack jobs, they created this disease which was carried and vectored, if that's proper English, by ticks. And people would get bitten by these ticks, and then they'd come down with Lyme's disease. And then the Lyme's disease was contagious. You know, that's part of the way it's transmitted, right? So they've already utilized ticks for germ warfare purposes. So why wouldn't they use other insects to do what DARPA is doing now, using them to genetically alter crops? But like I said, you have a Monsanto field, right? And then the wind blows some of the crops and seeds of the genetically modified Monsanto crop into a neighboring field of natural organic crops. And then what happens is the crops in the field of natural organic crops gets contaminated, right? And altered, because there's cross-pollination going on. And then, of course, later, the Monsanto lawyers show up, snooping around in the adjacent farmer's field and, you know, sues the hell out of the guy for stealing their copyrighted, crops, when really it was just the wind or some other means that caused this cross-pollination to take place. But you see where I'm getting at, okay? Once the genie is out of the bottle, it's very difficult to put it back in, especially where genetics are concerned. Also, one has to ask, how does this affect the food cycle? Insects genetically alter the plants. The plants get used, eaten by other insects. They have snails living on them. They have, you know, slugs living on them. Plant-eating animals of all stripes eat the plants that have been genetically modified, because they're just not going to stick to domesticated crops. You know, these insects will just pretty much go anywhere they feel like going in a hive consciousness fashion. So then animals eat these genetically modified plants, and humans eat some of the animals that have been eating these genetically modified plants, and you get the idea. Now, they've already, for some time now, we've talked about this in the past, but it bears repeating, by putting aborted fetal tissue cells in vaccines, by putting aborted fetal tissue cells in all kinds of soft drinks, all kinds of food, etc., etc., they've already been undermining the human DNA code. They've already been making inroads into severe, drastic alterations, okay? So now they're turning loose these insects that are biogenetically programmed to essentially infect plants, and by doing so will cause mutations, genetic mutations in plants. And then I think about what happened in the Middle Ages, where these mysterious craft flying around and, you know, spraying and these humanoids and in fields and crop fields and wheat fields spraying. And recently it's come out that for whatever reason in Australia, I can see why, okay, they regard rabbits, bunnies as a pest. And I guess if you get enough rabbits and bunnies in one place and they start to burrow and they can cause problems, okay, that I can understand. But you know what? They're cute. I like them. But what they're doing, and they haven't made a big to-do about this, but they have released information about it, which can be found online. They've announced that they're going to spray some kind of substance that has within it a virus that specifically targets these rabbits. But that this virus that they're going to use to genetically wipe out the rabbit population, it has the potential to jump horizontally, there's that word again, jump horizontally to other species. So they say, okay, we have all these rabbits running amok, let's spray them with aerosols through the air, and within the aerosols will be these viruses, you know, genetically created viruses that will specifically target these rabbits. But again, these rabbits are part of the food cycle, right? I mean, your ordinary household cat may decide to attack one of these rabbits and kill it. And then the cat goes home to its human family, right? Then what happens? Or eagles or hawks come along and they swoop down a little bunny rabbit. But then they carry it away and munch on it. But the rabbit's been infected with this virus that was airborne, that was sprayed, right? The point I'm making is that all of these activities, which are designed not only to wipe out human life, okay, the depopulation agenda is well documented. Henry Kissinger's State Department Report 200, a white paper that he wrote, saying that they needed, as a matter of U.S. national security policy, to reduce the world's population. And he specifically mentioned a number of countries, right? And then we have whack jobs like Ted Turner and Bill Gates and people like that talking about the need to reduce the Earth's population. Now, okay, if they wanted to play fair about it, they should reduce their own population first. But no, not these hybrid types, okay? Now, why is that? Because the hybrid types, they see themselves separately and above humans. They look down on humans, tip there. They see most humans as stupid sewer scum that need to be eliminated, to be used as proxies in endless wars. And it must be understood that DARPA and other agencies like DARPA are merely proxies for this Wetico hive mind parasite virus Gnostic demiurge. The Gnostics referred it to as the demiurge, evil spirit that pervades organisms, that pervades matter, that has a potential to pervade and control and take over matter, right? Think of it as a form of contagion itself, as radiation. And this was talked about in books like The Dark Gods, a classic book out of England years ago, that talks about how, you know, the Earth probably is not the only planet that is plagued by these parasitical beings that present themselves as gods. Again, that's another issue which is conveniently overlooked by these people who say that this could only be humans who are involved, right? the fact that every culture has concepts of gods and goddesses and a pantheon of gods. And I talked in the recent past about how the some of the Chin Hills Chin tribesmen in Burma and India in World War II, the British soldiers that were working with them, they learned a bit about their culture. It turned out that some of their cosmologies are virtually identical to the whole Anunnaki Sumerian chronicles. You know, these two brothers that, you know, were super gods, and they, you know, taught humanity all kinds of stuff. And then they, you know, had their squabbles and they had their differences with each other. I mean, we see this over and over in the Greek mythology and the Norse mythology, Sumerian. And yet somehow, some way, in the distant remote hills of Burma, the Chin Hill tribesmen, headhunters, some of them, they have virtually identical myths and cosmologies, suggesting that there was once a worldwide civilization where information was freely transmitted, and they all, or many of these surface cultures, believed the same thing, of these superhuman beings. And in the distant past, and the not-so-distant past, they took it for granted that these beings, these gods, if you will, held sway over humanity, that had a malign, at times malign, pervasive influence on humanity. But all that's gone out the wayside, right? So now we're just thinking that, oh, these humans who are not hybrids, these humans that are pretty much like us, they're just richer, and they're just more demented and evil, but they don't explain how they got evil. They don't explain how they wound up in that psychotic whack job state. They just take it upon themselves. They somehow attain power, positions of influence and power in high finance, in media, everywhere else. And they just decide, oh, you know, we'll just get rid of a third or more of the Earth's population. And they can do it because they have the means to do it. And they can act like they're doing humanity and the world a favor while they're doing it. Hence the release of all these insects by, you know, bearing all these viruses by DARPA. The same agency that decades ago talking about utilizing alien bodies in some way. Because that information at Roswell about using alien bodies is the basis for a unique, specific biowarfare program that would have wound up, eventually, in the research studies of the Joint Army Navy Research and Development Board, which later morphed into to DARPA. So all we're seeing now is this, the latest variation of that, where they're turning loose these viruses ostensibly to wipe out rabbits, right? But can't, you know, these viruses can't jump horizontally to other life forms. I just wish they'd leave the rabbits alone, beautiful little bunnies. Okay, maybe it was a mistake for someone to bring rabbits to Australia, but you know what? The rabbits liked it here. They began to breed. Leave them alone. You don't need to spray the whole friggin' atmosphere to get rid of the rabbits. The whole thing is psychotic and insane. So, again, would humans, strictly humans, be so hell-bent and so dedicated to just wiping out their fellow humans? No, they're not their fellow humans. That's where these people come up short. Because they refuse to factor in the ancient cosmologies, because they refuse to factor in the voluminous evidence which proves the existence of alien life forms and alien technology. And the fact that alien technology has been in the hands of the powers that be, mostly these Rothschild-controlled aerospace firms and the Rothschild-controlled military, hybridized types, the secret brotherhoods, fraternal hybridized orders, which pervade these secret agencies and R&D centers and control them all along. These people that push the, oh, it's only humans behind this, there are no aliens, they're maladaptive. And you look throughout history, and I study military history, as many of you know, and I see parallels where you have the old dreadnought admirals, the old surface ship, battleship admirals. Oh, what do you mean, a ship that carries airplanes? That's crazy. An airplane could never do harm to a big battleship. It could never do lasting harm to a battleship. That's crazy. The old cavalry, some cavalry commanders were adaptive, and they thought, okay, well, motor vehicles, armored vehicles, tanks, that's like a modern extension of cavalry, of horse mounted infantry. Okay, that makes sense. I think I'll transition from the horse to the tank, right? Well, others were not so willing to see the connection there. They said, no, we're going to stick to the horses. You can have your motor vehicles, you can have your jeeps, you can have your tanks, you can have your armored personnel carrier. I'm going to ride into battle with a horse because they're maladaptive, right? And when the Wright brothers went around telling people, well, we invented this thing called, I don't know what they called it back then, a plane or something, right? A lot of people looked askance at them. Oh, that's crazy. What do you want to fly for, right? What's the point of flying? Well, there were some people in the Army and Navy that were interested, gave the Wright brothers a contract to build planes and conduct research because some people were forward-thinking. They thought, okay, well, if there's something to this notion of flying, maybe we could, I don't know, weaponize it in the future, right? That's the way these people think. And you contrast that with the notion of, well, why would you want to fly? We're perfectly content with just walking or running or riding a horse. Some people looked askance at the whole concept of locomotives or trains. Oh no, what's the point of having a train, a locomotive? You can get there just as quickly in a covered wagon. And that mindset, that maladaptive mindset, is more than anything holding these people back. And you know what? I don't really care what happens to them. Because as far as I see it, they're Matrix Sentinels. And the only reason I have this commentary is a segue to the next part, where I'm going to be talking about possible contingencies the powers that be have for the return of the Second Sun. Mini system, because they would have been aware through their hoarding and secreting of all these ancient texts, which, haven't seen the light of day. And also through their alliances with certain ET races, that yes, every once in a while, we have these celestially driven cataclysms that affect the entire solar system. Sometimes it could be the passage of a humongous planet-sized or larger comet. Other times it could be the passage of, this mini solar system, the brown dwarf, red dwarf, blue Kachina, red Kachina, whatever you want to talk about, and how it's possible. In fact, if the ancient chronicles and the Sumerian chronicles are to be believed, taken at face value, there are ancient alien civilizations that still exist on the planets of this mini solar system. And they may view Earth and may even view the entire solar system as theirs. And so it creates this interesting dynamic, you see, where let's say that the beings on board Nibiru or whatever you want to call it, the planets that make up the second sun, let's say they left a garrison on Earth. And say, okay, we'll leave you guys here as like the plantation managers. You run the humans and you cull their population as you see fit, and you use them in your endless wars and squabbles and et cetera, and use them as cannon fodder, if you will, against other ET races in our incessant wars against them, right? All these other ET races. And, we'll come back eventually, and then, we'll all work together. Really, you guys will work under us. Well, what if after this passage of time and this mini solar system comes back and the aliens that were left here as plantation managers, maybe they don't want to come under the hegemony. Maybe they don't want to come under the rulership or under the command of the beings coming back in this mini solar system. And we've seen this duplicated in human history, the Peloponnesian Wars, where these colonists left Athens, Greece. They went and started colonies on other islands, and eventually they got sick of being taxed by the Athenians, got sick of all the rules of the Athenians, and they kind of lived on their own for a while. I remember communications, because that was in the wake of another celestially driven cataclysm. Humanity, civilization had to start over again. So communications were not what they are today, right? So these colonists who left Athens, they kind of became their own insular, homogeneous group. and some of those colonists started gravitating, in fact, came under the protection, if you will, of the Spartan Alliance, the Spartans being the arch nemesis, the arch rivals of the Athenians and the Athenian Empire, right? And what happens? It was like Athens says, no, no, no. You guys came from Athens. You're colonists. You know, we control you. You do what we say. And the colonists said, no, no, no. We've been over here in these islands for generations now. We don't need you guys. Here's a collective middle finger. F you very much. And so what do the Athenians do? They send their ships. They send their marines. They send their armies to subjugate and bring back into the fold those rebellious colonists who had the audacity to want to strike out and do their own thing, and even worse, come under the protection and be part of the Spartan Alliance. Well, I see something similar. It's possible something similar, a similar dynamic may have occurred here, where because everything is like hierarchy, everything is control, everything is power, who's to say that a lot of the reptilian hybrid bloodlines who have been getting their orders from a lot of reptilians above them in the pecking order all this time, maybe they don't welcome this group returning in this mini solar system. Okay, that's a whole nother dynamic, which I'm going to talk about. Anyway, we've reached the end of this first segment of Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars. I just wanted to put to bed this whole silly notion that it's only humans that are behind this. I mean, when you look back, folks, and you have throughout history, long before DARPA, long before the NSA, long before mind control, long before voice-to-skull technology, people were already hearing voices. This goes back thousands and thousands of years, if not for longer, okay? Is it credible to suggest that, oh, you know, what DARPA did was they sent operatives back in time to remotely mind control people to make them think they were hearing voices from God? I mean, that's just, it's absurdity heaped upon absurdity heaped upon absurdity. I've had Jerry Marzinski and Sherry Sweeney on the show talk about voices and how these are really intrusive entities. And we're going to do our level best to get another expert in this field about voices in the head and possessing entities that take people over. We're in the process of reaching out to a particular individual to bring him on the show, the Cosmic Switchboard. And then you look throughout history and all the accounts of people having visions of God or of having a mystical vision and being shown things, being taken up in their spirit astrally or being shown things and or hearing voices in their head thousands of years ago. Long before the NSA, long before DARPA, long before the CIA, but there is this notion today that holds it, oh, if it's a voice in someone's head, automatically that has to be the CIA, automatically it has to be the NSA, DARPA. It's complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. They're not going to waste their time on every single unfortunate homeless person talking to himself or herself, down and outer, huddled in a doorway, living in the street, talking to himself or herself. There's not going to be a dedicated operator at a control panel who's mind controlling that person. Some of the people may have gotten that way through remote mind control, absolutely. But all of them, or most of them, no. What happened was they got opened up to all these entities, and entities are the ones talking to them, and you know, that's why they're seen talking to themselves, seemingly talking to themselves, but it's really the entities that they're talking to. So let's move past this notion that it's only humans, because here's another factor that comes into play too. It's not only that the controllers don't want you to know that there's this alien force that's controlling everything. They don't want the people who have the potential to wreck this paradigm, the potential to lead a mass breakout, to know that, you know what, you guys are hybrids too. You guys are hybrids too. And I'm not talking about the Princess Leia syndrome. A lot of these whack jobs out there. Oh, I'm from ancient Lemurian, Lyrian royalty, and I'm here to help free you stupid humans. I'm not talking about that. And there's a lot of that going on. These whack jobs out there that have, you know, entity infested, that have nothing but disdain for the human race because they're not really humans. They're entity infested Draco hybrids or reptilian hybrids who think they're like feline descended or something, which is nonsense, right? I know felines. I know people that are shapeshifters of felines, and the energy between them and the energy of these reptilian Draco posers who think they're felines is like night and day, right? Completely different. So I just wanted to make that point. It's not only do they not want you to know that you're being controlled by non-human forces, but the fact that some of you out there are hybrids yourselves, and you have all these latent abilities within you, just waiting to be tapped and released and utilized. They don't want you to know that. Anyhow, we've reached the end of this segment of Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. And members, stay tuned for part two, because I'm going to talk about the second sun. I'm going to talk about alien stuff. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to the Cosmic Switchboard, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you members at the top of the next hour.